the practical effect of this is that if you're a Confederate soldier, you never do get out. Your term never runs out. Congress keeps changing the rules to keep everybody in the ranks. All Confederate soldiers, unless they were wounded or invalided out for some other reason, were essentially in the war for the duration. Conscription became very unpopular in the Confederacy. State rights advocates attacked it, said it was contrary to the principles upon which the Confederacy had been founded. Individual rights, state rights. Poorer men continued to attack it as favoring wealthy slaveholders. One Alabama Hill farmer expressed the feelings of many in this latter group, this group of poorer men, when he wrote, and I'll quote from his letter, "All they want is to get you all pumped up and go fight for their infernal Negroes, and after you do their fighting, you may kiss their hind parts for all they care." There's a poorer man's take on what's going on here. By 1864, parts of western North Carolina, northern Alabama, Arkansas, the hill country of Texas, many of these areas harbored large numbers of draft evaders or deserters. Some governors appointed hundreds of friends to civil service positions in order to let them escape the draft. And a number of historians have focused on this kind of resistance to the draft to indicate that really the Confederate society was falling apart from within because of legislation such as the draft. But there's another way to look at this, and I think the more accurate one, and that is that most white males of military age in the Confederacy did go in to the service. The overwhelming majority of them did. They didn't try to evade the draft. They didn't desert. They went in and they served. There's some interesting documents relating to this very question. In Virginia in 1864, an officer who was surveying the state to see what resources remained in the way of manpower reported that virtually everyone who could go had already gone. And most of those who weren't in the service were in jobs that were legitimately related to the war. He said that in his view, conscription was going to be beside the point in Virginia by the middle of 1864. Everybody was either already in the army or doing some kind of job related to the war or wasn't up to military service. Overall, as we've seen before, the Confederacy put about 4 out of 5 draft-age men into the army. About 800,000 probably of the slightly more than 1 million available. Only slavery behind the lines made this possible. We've talked about that before. But the various conscription laws made certain that once a man was in the army, he remained there. And that, in the end, helped the Confederacy last as long as it did. It would not have lasted nearly as long as it did without this national conscription. Of these 800,000 or so Confederate soldiers, about 80% volunteered freely. The draft produced 82,000 conscripts, about 10%. And another 80,000 or so enlisted in order to avoid the stigma of being conscripted. Once again, without the centralized mobilization of the manpower resources of the Confederacy, the war would have ended much sooner. So the South turns to conscription first. Let's see what the story is in the North. It's a similar story, but not an identical one. The North had far more men of military age. We've said that more than once. Yet it also experienced difficulties keeping its army's ranks filled. Traditionally, there were 3 types of military service in the United States. There was the regular army, which was always very small. The regular army never was the principal fighting force in a major conflict. It hadn't been in the war with Mexico. It wouldn't be in the Civil War. A second source for manpower, as in the southern states, was the militia, a state and federal institution going all the way back to earliest colonial days and with roots in the English militia system. It was created by state law, its officers were appointed by state authority, and the militia served at the request of the governors. But there was a uniform drill and organization for all the militias prescribed by Congress, and the Constitution provided for the militia being called into national service in certain kinds of emergencies. If one of those emergencies came up, the militia would be under the command of the president. If it were responding to a threat more local in nature, it would serve under the command of the governor. The militia never could be commanded by both. It was either in national service or in local service.